Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, VSPN. We are here on Thursday. It's January 3rd, 2019. Happy New Year, guys. We are going to preview the playoffs today. Joining me, well, basically we're going to preview the wild card, right? We're preview the whole playoffs. You can check that out, my whole playoff preview on ESPN.com now. But we can preview the wild card round today with friend of the show, writer, television personality, artist, Queen Elizabeth lookalike, as I view her Instagram here. It is ESPN's Mina Kimes. Mina, what's up?
Hey, thank you for sending me that cursed image of Queen Elizabeth with the Ravens. For those who don't remember, the Ravens did like a paint app, yes, or something where you could put a Ravens logo on your face. And I think it was in advance of the London game, somebody, poor Ravens social media employee, decided to do it to Queen Elizabeth last year, right?
Yes, last year.
And created one of the most cursed images of our time.
Almost immediately deleted. I think actually goes against the the laws of the United Kingdom, if I am not mistaken. Literally illegal image.
I'm surprised anyone there has let any American back since then. Like, that was a declaration of war.
You saw what happened with the Jags. They threw that crazy party and then didn't try to pay for it and sunk their season.
That was revenge.
It's a curse going to England if you're an NFL player. But we do have an NFL player who was born in London to talk about later on this show, which is our old pal Andrew Luck. We'll get to that game a little later on here in the playoff preview. But let's start with something that is not playoff related. Let's talk about Antonio Brown, a player who I don't understand what's happening here. Maybe you can fill me in. Why are the Steelers going to trade Antonio Brown, apparently?
The only possible explanation is that they've been forced, like, this is a Kyrie Irving type, really, like, they feel like they have no choice. Mm-hmm. Because as you have laid out so elegantly on Twitter over the last couple of days, it is a really bonkers thing to do to your football team. Not just because of who Antonio Brown is as a player, but because of the cap ramifications. It's crazy that it got to this point, especially given that Antonio Brown's been, like, doing this stuff since training camp, right? Mm-hmm. So you would have think they would have, the Steelers would have, I guess, figured out a way to sort of nip it in the bud, but it has been not nipped.
Do you think if the Steelers hadn't made the playoffs and lost in the playoffs, let's say they make it to the wild card round and they're in the Ravens spot and they lose to the Chargers this week and they're out of the playoffs. Do you think the same thing happens with Antonio Brown, or is this sort of like he's being blamed for this sort of collapse over the final few weeks of the year with his behavior?
Well, I saw somewhere that, and there's been a lot of pretty amusing reporting coming out of this, speaking of, again, to reference the NBA, we really need like a Jimmy Butler style Antonio Brown showed 100%. Up at practice and played with the backups. But which feels very realistic. But I read somewhere that he was upset when, I think, Juju Smith-Schuster was named by the Fez Pillow Players team MVP after AB had that big performance against the Saints. So it feels like those issues of jealousy were maybe more responsible for this than anything. And I have long felt like this was kind of a simmering who's going to get the credit scenario between the triple killer bees, whatever. And then I guess, you know, having Juju ascend the season probably roiled that up a bit too.
Mm-hmm. Was it Tom Brady who like was upset he didn't win what Patriots practice MVP or whatever?
Oh, yeah, right. Patriot of the Week. And then Patriots, like, they denied that Patriot of the Week, kind of denied that it was an award, as I recall. That was amazing. Oh,
it just seems like NFL teams should stop handing out internal awards to their players. It's only going to cause trouble.
That's like a general thing that workplaces should not do.
Oh, so you would not be thrilled if you were named ITK, ESPN Employee of the Week, Mina Kimes?
I'd be thrilled, but you would throw a football at my feet in the locker room if that happened.
I mean, I understand Antonio Brown is acting in a way that is not especially fun to be around. And I have no doubt in my mind that Antonio Brown is someone who, or even in this, the whole Steelers situation is bad, and that,
yes,
not everything that is happening there is being reported. That happens in a lot of different places. It happens in every NFL locker room. There's stuff you hear about that doesn't necessarily make it because it's just not either you can't source it reliably enough or it's not, you know, it just sort of fades because you get focused on other stuff. And I think if this were happening in week 6 or week 7, I think it would just kind of fade because, well, you know, you get to week 10, you have other stuff to focus on and you're just busy. Yeah. It's sort of like the Martavis Bryant stuff last year. It was a big story and then Juju kind of broke out and it was like, oh, who cares? Like, we have other stuff to really focus on at this point. But the problem for me is this. If the situation was different, if the scenario was different, I would believe the Steelers would be aggressive about making a move. If it weren't for the fact that they have a 37-year-old quarterback who is in the last stage of his career, who honestly was pretty bad over the last few weeks of the year in terms of missing open receivers, including Antonio Brown, I would sit here and say, okay, well, you know, they have the space, they have the time, they don't have to focus on right now, they can make a move, and maybe they still will. I'm very skeptical of the idea. It just, for all the reporting I've seen about the cap financial situation that is honestly either misleading or straight up inaccurate, the reality is this. The Steelers can pay Antonio Brown $22.2 million on their cap to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2019. Or whether they spread it across 2019 and 2020 or 2019, they're going to pay $21.1 million of their cap room to have him play for somebody else. So for the Steelers, that $21.1 million is a sunk cost. It's a difference of $1.1 million to have Antonio Brown play for you and to deal with whatever nuisance he's going to be versus having him play for somebody else. I can't imagine, outside of him literally beating up his teammates, and even then, Steve Smith beat up his teammates and still played for the Panthers and was just fine. I can't imagine a scenario where it makes sense for the Steelers, even given if he's hurting their culture, for them to make that make sense and trade Antonio Brown away at the end of Ben Roethlisberger's career.
Let me ask you this. All things considered, if, let's say, like, there was no drama or, you know, we didn't know about the stuff going on or whatever, if you're running the Steelers and you were forced between trading Ben Roethlisberger or Antonio Brown, what would you choose to do next season?
I think it would, without a question, it would be trading Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, it seems like it's, you know, he's Antonio Brown's going to be in the NFL longer than Roethlisberger's going to be. And Antonio Brown is playing at a higher level than Ben Roethlisberger is right now. Now, granted, it's harder to find a Ben Roethlisberger than it is to find an Antonio Brown. And they do have Juju Smith-Schuster. But the idea that, like, they're just going to trade Antonio Brown and quote-unquote promote Juju Smith-Schuster to the number one role and be fine, that's not the same thing. That's not how that works. Like, Juju Smith-Schuster is a very, very talented wide receiver. And he's going to have a long, successful career. But part of the reason he is so great is because the guy on the opposite side of the field is maybe the best receiver in football on his day, and he is taking attention away from that Juju Smith-Schuster. So, you know, you just promote James Washington, he might be fine. He's not going to be Antonio Brown, though.
Yeah, isn't it funny how people underestimate the degree to which NFL offenses are, like, kind of ecosystems, right? And if you take one thing out, it can send the whole thing into disarray. I mean, I do believe that was the case with Le'Veon, even though James Conner stepped up capably in his place. And it's always been the case with all of these guys, all the Killer Bees and Juju, and the notion that any of them was expendable, I think. You know, I mean, Antonio Brown owes a lot of his success to Ben Roethlisberger.
Of course.
Certainly, right? And vice versa. And Le'Veon, and it's like everybody kind of owes each other, but at some point, none of them wanted to believe that, I suppose. I don't know. I would have, logically, this trade makes no sense, but the news coming out, the justifications for the trade, some of the whispers, the organization being pretty openly critical of Antonio Brown leads me to believe it still might happen anyways.
It still might happen. I think, you know, I think just the point is it is unprecedented in terms of a team making this decision about a player. You'd have to look for someone like Terrell Owens in Philadelphia. He was actively not showing up during games, where he was, you know, holding press conferences, demanding a trade, and the financial situation was nowhere near as dire for the Eagles, given their context, as it is for the Steelers right now. I mean, if you were Pittsburgh and you said, okay, we can't deal with this, we have to trade Antonio Brown, is there a certain level of compensation you are holding out for? Are you sending him to a particular part of the league? Like, what do you think is the likely outcome if they do decide we have to trade him at any cost?
Boy. Well, okay. So we're assuming this is a pre-June 1st trade.
Because
and they'd want to take advantage of the current draft. The crazy thing is, like, they would probably need to bolster their defense. The safety and linebacker position is where mm-hmm. they'd want to pick. Man, I don't know. The other crazy thing, Bill, is like, if none of this stuff had gotten out, they probably would have gotten a haul for him. Right. Don't you think? Like, not that they still won't, but all of these leaks and these stories getting out, it hurts the Steelers' bargaining position with other teams.
Right. I mean, who, if you're a, let's say you're Marty Herney in Carolina, and the Steelers come to you and say, hey, we want DJ Moore and a first-round pick for Antonio Brown, which I don't know if that's the compensation. I'm just throwing a team out there that makes sense in terms of having a young receiver throwback and a pick that would make sense in an Antonio Brown trade. If you're Marty Herney and the Steelers are trading a Hall of Fame wide receiver who is 30 years old, granted he has slipped a little bit from his 2015-2016 peak, but still in the prime of his career, I mean, like that, that's just, it's a weird offer. It's like you, that's like the Nigerian spam, equivalent of a football trade. Like, it's too good to be true. Something is up, and that would make you think, okay, well, why do I want this player? Like, clearly we know there's something happening here. So I think even if the stuff hadn't been reported, we would still be having an issue. And now that it's been reported and the rumor mill around the NFL is sort of churning as to what is actually happening in that building, I think it goes even further. So I think you're going to have teams who, even given that Antonio Brown is incredibly talented, even though you're going to be getting him on a pretty friendly deal, 3 years, $39 million, fully unguaranteed, I still think there are going to be teams who are going to have incredible second thoughts about giving up, yeah. you know, a promising young player and possibly a first-round pick as well. All right, Mina, let's preview the playoffs here in a moment on the show. But first, wanted to talk about our pals at SeatGeek. And of course, if you are heading to any of this week's postseason games or plan on going to any postseason games here during the NFL playoffs, well, I think you know where to get tickets. If you're a road fan, wants to go travel and see your favorite team play in the postseason somewhere else, or home fan, didn't maybe expect your team to make it to the postseason, want to get tickets for a run that might not be happening again for the next few years, I think you know where to get tickets. But if you don't, let me recommend our pals at SeatGeek, because SeatGeek goes all around the web and has been for weeks now for these games using their deal score technology to rate all the tickets, so you know you're getting a good deal when you do buy tickets, and then getting them to you reliably and affordably. And if you don't want to check out the NFL playoffs, if you're a fan of, say, the Raiders, well, guess what? You can check out a lot of different things. MLB's coming up. Check it. Get those baseball tickets. NBA is in full swing. NHL's in full swing. I went to a Rangers game last night. I went and purchased those tickets on SeatGeek, as you might expect. Got great seats. Had a good time. And if it's concerts, theater, anything that's sports or not sports related, if there's this ticket, you can get it with our pals at SeatGeek. And best of all, if you haven't used SeatGeek before, you can get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase by downloading the SeatGeek app and entering in promo code Barnwell at checkout today. So again, haven't used it before, go to SeatGeek, get the app, go to SeatGeek.com, promo code Barnwell for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. If you have, just a reminder, use our pals at SeatGeek. They are a wonderful sponsor of the show. Would not exist, I would say, without our friends at SeatGeek. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Now back to the show. On the other hand, of course, we have a few teams here who did not have disappointing campaigns as we hit the wild card round of the playoffs. And Mina, I think we have to start with the team who I don't think either of us were expecting to make the postseason this year, and that is your old pals, the Seattle Seahawks, who are playing the Dallas Cowboys in the wild card round of the postseason. And just start with this. How excited are you that the Seahawks did not end up playing in the 10 a.m. Sunday spot?
Thrilled. That's partially the reason I wanted the Cowboys, because I knew they wouldn't put them in the morning spot. And also I, you know, didn't want them to play the Bears. But it's huge. I mean, this is a pretty optimal outcome for Seattle, both slot, location, and I think opponent, really. I mean, just looking mm-hmm. across the NFC, the entire playoff picture, I don't think there's a better opponent for Seattle.
Here's the thing about the Cowboys, and I don't know if you agree with me, but just the simplest math, simple point differential, I'm not sure the Cowboys are really all that good. This is a team that they've gone 7-1 over the final 8 games of the year. And granted, Amari Cooper looks great. Ezekiel Elliott looks great. They have not won a single game over that 8-game stretch by more than 7 points. And their one loss was to the Colts by 23 points. They lost 23-0. Now, granted, beat the Saints 13-10, impressive defensive performance. Beat the Eagles twice. Beat the otherwise the Falcons at by 3 points, Washington by 8 points at the backup quarterback, I believe, the Bucks by 7, the Giants by 1 in week 17 in a game where Jason Garrett inexplicably, I think it's fair to say, decided to play Dak Prescott for the entire outcome. I don't understand what happened, but I mean, it just seems like when it comes to this team, like the record's great and there's certainly some outstanding performers, but I mean, what's sort of their, outside of maybe the Saints game, have you really been impressed by them a ton over the past couple months?
Not really. I mean, Dak played pretty well in that last game. I was impressed by the defense. You know, mentioned the Saints game. Obviously, the defense was incredible
right, for
in that.
Sure.
I was impressed by them, but they kind of tailed off at the end there a little bit, especially in the final two or three games. Actually, really more than that. So I watched that Colts game you mentioned with a lot of interest, and they were very underwhelming.
Yes.
The Colts, what really struck me about that game, Bill, was I expected the Colts to be able to throw on them. The Cowboys have a much better rushing defense than passing defense, you know, by most statistics. Yes, fifth in DVOA, 16th in passing, fifth in rushing, 16th in passing. But the Colts just ran all over them and just destroyed them at the line of scrimmage. And then I saw Brian Nemhauser, who is a Seahawks writer, tweeted recently ahead of after the season ended, ahead of this game, that the Cowboys are something like 1-5 when teams rush for over 100 yards against them, which would seem to bode well for the Seahawks, given that that's kind of their thing.
Well, given that Russell Wilson had to wave off Brian Schottenheimer and attempt a pass in the fourth quarter to seal up the game against the Cardinals, we can say pretty comfortably they're going to be sticking with the run. And I mean, it's, you know, I think as much as we joke about Schottenheimer and as confusing as their success can be at times, and this is a team that is eighth in offensive DVOA. It's legitimately good offense. And I mean, granted, they're running the ball, I think, significantly more than anybody else in the league. I think they're the only team above 48%, and they're almost at 53% runs. But I mean, this offense, like, they've been succeeding with it long enough that I'm pretty confident they're going to be able to run the ball against pretty much anybody.
Yeah. I mean, the Cowboys also run the ball more than, you know, I mean, the difference between these two teams on offense and the reason why Seattle is so much better than them is that, you know, because they both run the ball pretty efficiently, is that Russell Wilson is incredible at throwing it deep this year.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's just remarkable. Second most deep attempts, I believe. No, sorry. Third most. And he's only been picked just once on deep ball. So that's been, I think, the difference in a lot of these games. And some of that is, you mentioned Wilson overriding Schottenheimer, but a lot of it is baked into their action and into their offense, and the use of play action really opens up the deep ball for them. And I think they'll be able to do it against Dallas.
Yeah, I absolutely think that this is a matchup where the Seahawks could be able to exploit the Cowboys in play action. I think the Cowboys have the, if I remember correctly, I put it in my column today, I should remember it, the fifth worst defense in the league in terms of passer rating against play action. So, I mean, you have those super talented linebackers, but they're young. They're not incredibly experienced. They're athletic, but they can also, you know, run their way into and out of mistakes. So you might be able to exploit that if you're Russell Wilson and make plays downfield. I will say, though, in thinking about this game, I don't remember anything about the week three game between these two teams. It feels like it's a different universe. This is a game where Tavon Austin had a touchdown for the Cowboys on a 3-yard pass where Brandon Marshall got 6 targets for the Seattle Seahawks. It feels like it's another year altogether versus the game between these two teams in week three.
Yeah, no Earl Thomas, no Amari. I was like, these are very, very different teams. I think the Cowboys will fall probably prey to some of the same coaching mistakes potentially, but aside from that, yeah, the personnel is totally different. Blake Jarwin, who sounds like an invented name for a Cowboys tight end, could be an issue in this game, whereas he wasn't in the previous game. The offensive line is a little bit different too on the Cowboys side. Getting Zach Martin back was huge, but they still, I think, have gotten a lot worse as the season has gone by.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question. I want your honest answer. Do you actually trust Brian Schottenheimer?
I trust Russell Wilson.
That's not what I asked you. And I didn't ask you if you trust Mike Solari. I asked you, do you trust, like this is for the Cable Thanos video, if you say the wrong answer. Do you trust Brian Schottenheimer?
I do not think So no, I don't think he's a good offensive coordinator. I don't think he's a train wreck. Like before the season, we thought we Seattle fans and human beings who watch football thought he was going to be a train wreck. And I absolutely don't think that's happened. I don't think he's in the upper echelon or close to it of offensive coordinators in the NFL, but he has done much better, I think, than anyone could have expected. I mean, he draws up some pretty nice plays every now and then. There's a lot of frustrating decisions, and some of that's not from Brian Schottenheimer. Some of that's Pete Carroll, okay? The dictate to run the ball, that came from Carroll, right? It started around week three, I believe. And so I don't entirely put the blame on him, and he does do frustrating things, and, you know, we joke about the draws on third and long and that kind of thing. But he's not actively like a massive negative for this team.
Just picturing like the text coming across the screen, actively not a nightmare for the Seattle Seahawks. I'm intrigued. I mean, I feel like he has certainly exceeded my expectations. Like you said, has not been an absolute train wreck. The offense has worked given the constraints, whether it's Pete Carroll, whether it's Brian Schottenheimer that have been put on Russell Wilson. And I think, you know, ideally, if I was running things, I would throw the ball more. I'd get Russell Wilson out on his feet more. I'd run Russell Wilson more. That's me. But, you know, I think altogether, like, isn't if they're eighth in DVOA, it's not if they, the results are there. I mean, the numbers are there. So, you know, I can't fault them. And the thing I would say, I'm less worried about them moving the ball in this game than I would be about the Cowboys. And I don't know how much I believe the numbers here, but, who was it? Derek Brown on Twitter was talking about how the Seahawks, of course, under Pete Carroll, play the fourth most zone coverage in football, and Dak has really struggled against zone coverage this year. And I'm always skeptical of numbers like that, because you kind of figure, like, if you were bad against zone coverage, you kind of would have been figured out before you got to the NFL. But, I mean, against the Seahawks, the Panthers, the Colts, and the Bucks, four teams who play a lot of zone coverage, Dak has not played well.
That's why, and people think I'm crazy when I say this, I'm more worried about Cole Beasley in this game than Amari Cooper. Because he, you know, the Seahawks play a lot of zone. They play a lot of single high safety, so Amari could get open downfield. But largely, I think they have the capability to neutralize him. But Cole Beasley can kill you in zone. And you saw him do that against the Jaguars, I think, earlier in the season. And I could see a game where he's annoyingly open a lot. Since this has been very pro, I feel like my rhetoric has indicated I highly favor Seattle. I don't highly favor them. The Cowboys' defense is better than the Seahawks' defense, you know? So it's really that the Seahawks have an edge on offense and coaching, in my opinion.
I mean, Jason Garrett is not exactly, I don't have a lot of faith in him, even though they have gone on this winning streak. What would be the most satisfying outcome to this game? Would it be a play on the Tony Romo, botch snap from years ago? Would it be Jason Garrett making a terrible decision and losing the game? What would be the satisfying ending for you as a Seahawks fan here?
Well, I have no ill will towards Jason Garrett, so this wouldn't be like, personally, that's fine for me. You know, I just would love it if they crushed them, but, Seattle, but it would be amusing, I think, and infuriating for Cowboys fan if it did come down to Jason Garrett's decision making, because there's been this kind of joke going around that the Cowboys making it to the playoffs is the worst thing that could have happened to the Cowboys, because it means they're going to keep him, you know, and I don't think, even if they lose and even if Garrett does make some frustrating conservative decisions, I still think Jerry Jones is going to keep him since they made it to the playoffs. And I imagine that would be horrifying for Cowboys fans.
When do you think Jason Garrett will no longer be the coach of the Dallas Cowboys? What year do you think the Cowboys will have a new coach?
I think if they miss the playoffs, the next time they miss the playoffs, I think he's out. I really do.
Really?
Yeah, I know. I just think Cowboys fans have really turned against him.
Sure.
I've noticed that, and I think at some point that has to get to Jones.
I would hope, but I just – why didn't it happen by now? I mean, I don't understand why suddenly Jerry Jones has decided that Jason Garrett is the hill he wants to die on as far as head coaching goes. Like, we already found the best guy. No, can't find anybody else. Sorry. I mean, maybe – you know, maybe if he wants Lincoln Riley and Lincoln Riley decides eventually to come out of Oklahoma, that'll be the time, but – I mean, just like we were, it was a widespread joke as recently as November 5th that the Cowboys were about to fire Jason Garrett and they ended up winning the football game or ended up making the playoffs.
I don't know. I mean, Jerry Jones is so noted for his logic and analytical thinking that I can't explain it either, Bill.
All right, we're going to get to some logic and coherent thinking after the break. We'll preview the rest of the wild card round games here on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm Bill Barnwell, joined again by Mina Kimes of ESPN. We are previewing the wild card round. We covered Seahawks-Cowboys. Do we need to make a pick in that game? Is that necessary?
I feel like it was implied.
It was implied pretty hard, and I feel like we don't need to go there, but I would not shock. I think a close game would not surprise me. I did think the Seahawks, to me, are slight favorites. They're the better team of the two. Let's get to another difficult choice for you here, Mina Kimes. I think you know where I'm going with this. On one side of the AFC wildcard matchup, you have the Los Angeles Chargers, the team that you have bandwagoned for several years now, that you are a known backer. If there was a Chargers Kickstarter, you would be a backer of the Chargers Kickstarter. On the other hand, you're also a Lamar Jackson fan, and the Baltimore Ravens are on the other side of this matchup. How do you choose between possibly your favorite young quarterback in the league and your adopted team with its incredibly elderly quarterback himself, Philip Rivers?
This is tough. A true Sophie's choice for me between my two sons. I don't have a preference. I will say I like it when people – part of the reason – it's so funny. Lamar Jackson has become such like this – battle point on Twitter, I feel like, when it doesn't have to be that complicated. Like, we don't have to make these sweeping statements about a rookie quarterback who's played seven games, right? Clearly what's happening is the Ravens have figured out how to utilize his skill set, and it fits in well with their defense. And that's pretty simple, and it doesn't have to be a controversial thing to say without making both statements. But I do find myself, I tend to root for people to be wrong, people who are annoying and loud on Twitter. So I will take some pleasure in him, you know, having a good game for that reason. But I've gone back and forth on this one more times than I think any of these games, Bill, in terms of picking the winner. And I think it's going to come down. And I talked about this a little bit on my podcast, that if the Chargers score first, I think they can win. And if they don't, I think the Ravens will win.
Okay. Well, that settles it. I mean,
there you go. Now you
problem
know,
solved.
Guys,
we can betters. Move on. I mean, you're 100% right. And realistically, like, Lamar Jackson is not, it's not as simple as saying, oh, well, he is a superstar right now, or he's a total bust right now, and he's not going to succeed, or he's going to succeed. I think, as presently constructed, he is very valuable to the Ravens in terms of his ability as a runner, and the throws he does make, I think can be effective. He was very good as a passer against the Chargers, averaged 9.3 yards per attempt. So very effective as a passer in that game, even though he only averaged 3 yards per run. I think 13 carries for 39 yards against the Chargers. And I think it's, you know, I don't think this is going to be their offense for the rest of his career as a starting quarterback, just because I don't think physically he's going to hold up to getting 17 carries a game. No quarterback in league history has ever done that. Lamar Jackson had the most carries for a quarterback since the merger in 1970, despite the fact that he started 7 games this season. That is how frequently he is carrying the football, and how out of character that is for an NFL quarterback. But in 3 years, would it surprise me if they were doing 25% of what they do with him as a runner, and he was a much better passer? Not in the slightest. That makes total sense to me. And also, it could work out where he gets hurt, and he's not the same guy, and he doesn't end up throwing the ball at all. I mean, he has a disappointing career. That's still on the table. But I think, you know, I think sort of there is a group of people who are frustrated because they see Lamar Jackson getting credit for this sort of hot stretch from the Ravens, more credit than perhaps he deserves. And I think he deserves a good amount of that credit. I just think it's not, you know, it's not a binary thing. And I think too many times with quarterbacks, even with someone like Josh Allen, who I know I'm skeptical of, like, he has some things that are really good. He's been awesome as a scrambler. He's been great as a runner. He has some very nice throws. He also has some throws that are absolutely awful. We can't make any proclamations yet. All we can do is sit here and say, well, you know, what do we think of him coming out of school? What has he shown that's been consistent? What has he shown that's been inconsistent?
Yeah, their production is pretty similar between those two quarterbacks. You know, Lamar is just in a significantly better situation, but Josh Allen was taken much higher in the draft. So, you know, those things can inflect how we look at them and their success. And it's so hard to evaluate any of these rookie quarterbacks, honestly, at this point, aside from Baker Mayfield, in my opinion. Like, I just, that last Arizona game against Seattle, I mean, how could you look at Josh Rosen and say we know anything about him? It was just such a nightmare scenario for him. But all that said, Bill, I have been impressed, really impressed with how the Ravens have used Lamar. My concern with him isn't so much, you know, that there that a defense is going to quote unquote figure him out or, you know, force him to run with his arm or that kind of thing. My bigger concern with him is just simply ball security.
For sure.
Because that's been a huge inflection point in a lot of these Ravens games. Is he had that fumble last week, and then, you know, he's had a number of fumbles, I guess, in pretty clutch situations. And I think that could be the difference in this game if the Chargers are able to keep pace.
Yeah, I mean, 12 fumbles for Lamar Jackson. Again, on, you know, he was playing all year, but 7 starts were most of his touches, 147 carries, 170 pass attempts, and 16 sacks. So 186, like around 325, 330 touches, 12 fumbles. That's a lot. I mean, that's not an insignificant amount. And 3 interceptions. He had a couple dropped here and there as well. I mean, he's a player who, you know, he's a 21-year-old rookie who in the first half of the first year of his career. And in most cases, those guys are not going to be playing in meaningful situations. But because Lamar Jackson has been able to, you know, build a successful game plan on the offensive side of the ball for the Ravens, and sort of, you know, not take too much away from what the defense has been accomplishing, I mean, this is working. And I don't know how long it's going to keep working for, but it would not shock me if they don't turn the football over that they end up winning this football game.
Yeah. I mean, the Chargers defense is, like, good, but sure, not great. Let's see. They're 10th in pass and 10th in run, which is remarkably balanced. Yeah, their pass rush tailed off a little bit at the end.
I think with both these teams, they have sort of – they haven't been forcing takeaways as much as they did a year ago. The Chargers are at 20. They're 16th in the league. The Ravens had 6 in the final 2 weeks, but even that only got them the 17th for the year. They're 22nd, as if you saw, I don't know if you saw it, Eric Weddle decided to clap back at me on Twitter when I didn't talk about them in a column about defense earlier this week. Thank you so much. He responded, I was like, oh, you guys don't force enough takeaways anymore. And then, of course, they forced 3 takeaways in the final game of the year. So that's full credit to the Bill Barnwell Twitter jinx for that one. But, you know, I think
– tremendous.
Like, both those teams, we know they have playmakers. And we know that last year they were incredible at forcing takeaways. So I'm not sitting here and saying they're going to force 4 takeaways, but I think that's definitely in the realm of possibilities for this game to an extent that I think it's not the case for maybe any of the other matchups outside of maybe Bears-Eagles. And that's because I think not only do we have 2 defenses that can take the football away, but also, you mentioned Lamar Jackson, Philip Rivers has been turning the football over a bunch over the last few weeks as well. So are you worried about him? I mean, given that he has what now? 6 interceptions in the final 3 games of the year?
He's been not great over the last month. You know, he was a viable MVP candidate, I really think. You know, he didn't really have the volume to compete with, like, Mahomes and Breeze. But, statistically, he was really in the top 4 in just about every category. And then over the last month, he's dropped to the bottom 10 in most rate stats, which, you know, they've played good defenses in the last part of the season. So that plays into it as well. But I mentioned earlier that they need to score in their first drive. He's been so awful at the beginning of games. It's remarkable. I'm very... So this is a rematch, right? And it really felt like in the last game he was utterly befuddled by the Ravens defense, which is a thing that most quarterbacks seem to be against the Ravens defense, which is very tricky and well-coached and can execute at every level. But I would think that Rivers, being the veteran quarterback that he was, that they're going to come out with a different plan and that he will make the necessary adjustments to play better, because otherwise if he doesn't in this first half, I really don't think that they're going to win.
Okay, you know how, like, when Stefan would be on SNL, they would put, like, jokes on the cue cards that Bill Hader wasn't expecting, and so he would just read them? It feels like instead of scripting the first 15 plays of Chargers games, they're just, like, throwing stuff out there at Philip Rivers on the fly to see if he can pick it up and adapt to it with no notice, and it's not going
I thought
well
you were
going to
go in the direction of me making fun of how I was talking about the Ravens defense. This defense has everything. Pass rushers that can trick you with their, you know, like that kind of the Stefan thing.
I wish I'd gone that way. I did not though. I'm thinking about Philip Rivers' interceptions from what I remember. Some of them were just like he threw a fade and Mike Williams or Charlie's got out jumped for the football. And that's going to happen. And I'm not worried about Philip Rivers from that perspective. But like you said, I mean, the Ravens, they're a great defense. They can trick you into making mistakes. And I think even an effective Philip Rivers, even if there's nothing wrong with him, even if he's playing exactly the same and just having some bad luck with interceptions, I think they can force him into a terrible day. And I think that, you know, maybe they're able to get Mike Williams one-on-one against Marlon.
Oh, Philip Rivers called the cops on you. Sorry.
Called the cops on you. That is Philip Rivers' kids coming in a fire truck to beat me up, all nine of them. You know, it would not shock me if the Chargers can pick on Marlon Humphrey and make big plays and come up with a shot here or there. But I just think I think there's going to have to be more running the football for the Chargers and have that be an effective part of their game, because I do think that, you know, if you have Philip Rivers throw the ball 45 times against the Ravens, I don't know that it's going to end well in most cases.
Yeah. The last game against Denver, Melvin Gordon was basically neutralized before leaving, I think, in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, with an injury.
Something happened to his ankle. I mean, he's playing, but he's still clearly a little bit gimpy. And I agree. They cannot lean entirely on Rivers' arm. And in that game, too, Broncos' pass rushers were just getting so much pressure so early that it really affected their offensive game planning. And you saw Philip Rivers really leaning on short passes. And I could see that happen. Again, what we're describing, what the Broncos did, is would be the worst case scenario for the Chargers against the Ravens again. And it's crazy. We sound so pessimistic about the Chargers. I think a lot of that is just derived from what's happened over the end of the season, right? That they could kind of finish with a weak stretch, because they really are on paper a very good football team.
I mean, I have a well of skepticism about the Chargers. I am happy to just at any point spew out. That's been learned from years and years of sticking my fingers into the socket and getting shocked. But you're right. I mean, this was a team that, you know, as recently as what, week 15, when they beat the Chiefs in that Thursday night game, we were all excited about the Chargers. It was like they graduated from being Chargers. Like they were a professional football team now at 11-3. And I mean, the last 2 weeks have been pretty ugly, but like you said, I mean, I think on paper, they are the better football team, and I think it's hard to disagree with that. But I would say, given that this is a game in Baltimore, it is a 10 a.m. game for the Chargers. They're traveling to the East Coast for a 10 a.m. game, which is no one's idea of a good time if you're from the West Coast.
Good in those situations, but yeah.
Okay. How big is that sample?
Yeah. I just made it up. Do you think that when the Chargers graduate, they become fully charged, like it goes like to 100%?
Yes.
The whole time you were thinking, I was just talking, I was thinking about that.
Just real papers.
Yeah, this is the bad. No, you're right. This is bad for them. They got screwed.
They got screwed.
Best record. This is terrible.
And best record. And I think just this is the wrong matchup for them. I think they would have been in much better shape had they gone to play a team that does not run the football as effectively, and a team that whose defense is not as capable as the Ravens' defense. I'm going to pick the Ravens in this game.
I'm going to change my pick to the Ravens. You convinced me. I'm going to change. I got to email our ESPN NFL people too, because I submitted my picks. Like I said, I oscillated on this a million times, and I think it was an emotional hedge for me picking the Chargers. But it's a win-win either way. I'm going to go Ravens too, though.
All right. Win-win either way. So we'll be reminded of that as we try to hop back on the Chargers bandwagon as it pulls away fully charged into the night for the divisional round of the playoffs. I'm intrigued by Eagles-Bears because I think if I'm being rational, I think the Bears should win by like two touchdowns.
Yes.
But Nick Foles is a thing, right? Like you can't pretend that you're not at least intrigued by what Nick Foles can do in the postseason.
Nick Foles is the black swan event of quarterbacks. Like, are you familiar with the concept
of
the black swan? So, I don't know. Anyone who thinks that they can predict what Nick Foles is or will be or how he'll perform is lying to themselves at this point.
The only thing I would say, is this. I would be worried Nick Foles is going to get hurt in this game.
Oh, yeah. He's banged up, right?
He's always ribs? Banged up.
Yeah.
He has a rib injury. Quote unquote, he had the wind knocked out of him late in that Texans game, but I think there was an actual injury there. And then it got sort of re-aggravated in week 17. They had Nate Sudfeld come in for
Well, the good thing is they're just playing the Bears, so it won't be a problem.
They will not exacerbate the issue. But on the other hand, let me ask you this. Maybe that's the wrong transition. Let me just ask you this. What would be more satisfying to you as a fan? Would it be Nick Foles having a terrible game and upsetting Eagles fans and ruining the whole Nick Foles magic? Or would it be Nick Foles having a monster game and eliminating the Bears and having that perpetuate itself?
Well, First of all, as a Seahawks fan, I want the Eagles to win so that Seattle plays the Rams instead of New Orleans. So that's optimal. I mean, I, Bill, I root for chaos, so I absolutely want Nick Foles to roll to the Super Bowl again because it creates a insane nightmare scenario for Philadelphia. How can, like, what do you do if you're Philadelphia and Nick Foles, forget winning a second Super Bowl, what if he makes it to the Super Bowl again? Mm-hmm. What do you do this offseason if you're Philadelphia?
I don't know.
I'm serious. What do you do?
You build a statue of Nick Foles, and then you encourage Carson Wentz to retire and say, hey, live a nice, wonderful life in North
Truly,
Dakota.
Truly, though, like, really, that's it's a crazy scenario. Don't you agree?
I mean, I think no matter what happens, I think if Nick Foles wins a second Super Bowl, they will still have Carson Wentz as their quarterback of 2019. I do.
I mean, it's crazy.
Here's why.
I mean,
here's why.
Because pressure on Carson Wentz, can you imagine? But
oh, of course. But the reason why is I think when I was looking back and I did my Lessons of 2018 piece, and I was thinking about Blake Bortles, and I was thinking about Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, when a team falls in love with like a quarterback they take at the top of the draft, they will move heaven and hell to convince themselves that they are right about that decision. I'm not saying Carson Wentz is a bad pick. I think he's a great quarterback.
No, I know,
but of course, like the perception is still going to be, hey, Nick Foles is really good. We shouldn't trade him. But I think just, we shouldn't let him go. But I just think the reality is, like, you get so priced into the idea of your young quarterback being the absolute guy for your organization on and off the field, start to finish, that I don't think anything, even a full Super Bowl win, would change the Eagles' mind.
I think you're absolutely right about, like, teams falling in love with quarterbacks picked at the top. I had my close personal best friend, Matt Hasselbeck, on my podcast recently, and we were talking about Jameis Winston, and I was like, oh, there's no way they can keep Jameis Winston. And he said, if the guys who drafted him are still in the building, mm-hmm. he is never going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Jason Licht, right? And that's proven to be true.
Right.
It's been reported. They're going to keep, and granted, Jameis Winston did play really well, you know, towards the end of the season. But I do think you're right that if an organization picks a guy and they're all still there, they will move heaven and earth to make him work because he is their guy. So right. I believe that. I think you're right.
But if that happens, let's not even say Super Bowl. Let's say he has a excellent postseason. Let's say they upset the Bears. Nick Foles loses in the NFC Championship game. We'll say to the Seahawks, if that's possible. I don't know. And we'll say he plays really well. Where is he starting week one of 2019?
Giants?
Hmm.
Feels good. I would say Jacksonville also feels pretty good.
I think Joe Flacco is the starting quarterback for the 2019 Jacksonville Jaguars.
It's done. It's decided.
I think it's one of those things where it's going to come out like the moment the offseason ends that Tom Coughlin's already made this trade.
Flacco's Foles is really a lot better than him at this point. It's really remarkable. He, in my mind, will be the most desirable free agent. It's funny though, because the Eagles, we've been talking this entire time about Nick Foles and his magic and his unpredictability, but really, over these last few games, what's jumped out to me, and Foles was okay in the last game. You know, he's been good though, I'm not gonna lie, but their offensive line looked really good. Yes. Both Eagles lines, which was how they won the Super Bowl last year, quite frankly, is but, you know, the both of the lines looked really good, and they really do look, if there's a formula for beating the Bears, I would say that would be it. The fact that they're able to protect Foles and then that Michael Bennett and Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham look like the monsters that they've been.
Yeah, and we saw it last year. I mean, they spent all year basically resting Fletcher Cox, playing him 55, 60, 65% of the snaps. So when they got to the postseason, he played 85, 90% of the snaps. And he was great. He was 100% charged. He locked it in. I mean, he played great. And I think that's not quite to the same extent this year because they weren't quite as healthy along their defensive line, but it does make sense. We're going to see their best players on the field more frequently and hopefully fresher when it comes to the postseason. And let me ask you this, Mina. So I voted Matt Nagy coach of the year. I think he did a phenomenal job. I have no qualms about the defense. The Bears are 20th in offensive DVOA. I guess that's not really a question. I probably should have asked you. Where do you think the Bears rank in offensive DVOA? I mean, the Bears, I feel like the perception around the Bears is that they are a great offense.
Really?
I mean, like, you know, Matt Nagy's going to win Coach of the Year for what he did with
you're
the
right.
offense.
No, no, you know what? You're right.
There I mean, we have a prominent a prominent colleague, I guess ex-colleague and friend of this podcast is out here, you know.
Hi, Robert.
Standing for every single offensive move they made this offseason as a positive idea. I mean, the Bears are behind the Giants, the Broncos, the Vikings who fired their OC, even the Bengals. They rank behind the Bengals in offensive DVOA. Is it possible that we're just maybe overstating the work either Matt Nagy has done or Mitchell Trubisky is doing or what this offense as a whole is contributing to the Bears winning football games?
So I looked at the DVOA expecting to point out that they were higher in weighted DVOA. They're actually worse. Mm-hmm. The 21st. Right. And for those who don't know, weighted DVOA is skewed towards more recent game performances. So that, like Cleveland, for example, is eighth in weighted offensive DVOA, you know, versus 18th. That's crazy. I think that we are not overpraising Matt Nagy because I don't think he's been given great tools to work with. So
really?
Yes, I on offense. I am not incredibly high on Mitch Trubisky. Mm-hmm. I'm not high on most of his weapons outside of Tariq Cohen, who does disappear in games, by the way. But I think they've got a fine line. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's a lot of talent on that. Like, there's not a lot of star power on that side of the ball.
I think Robert Mays just threw his his iPhone against the wall in anger.
He agrees. And
is now just charging the wall in offensive line stance over and over again like it's a what's the thing? A cart. I mean, I agree with you. I think the weapons are good. I think that with a great quarterback, the weapons would be good. And I think that Mitch Trubisky, honestly, over the last 3 weeks, I think it's been the best sustained stretch of play in his career. So, I mean, even though the weighted DVOA has not been that great, I think it's not really been Trubisky's fault. I think the Tariq Cohen point you made is really smart in that we know, I mean, at his peak, he is a absolute game-changing running back. And the guy he reminds me of happens to be a player on the opposite side of the field in this matchup, who is Darren Sproles. Every year it feels like Darren Sproles, when he's healthy, like in week two, maybe not recently, but in the years past, like week two or week three, he would have like an MVP caliber game. And it would be like, wow, why doesn't Darren Sproles, you know, get 20 touches every single week? And well, he's not going to be able to hold up getting 20 touches every single week. With Tariq Cohen, I mean, we know he can be a dominant player for a week or maybe even 2 weeks in a row, but there are games where he'll have, you know, 17 yards from scrimmage and be totally shut down. So I don't know if that's a Nagy thing, but I kind of suspect it might just be the reality of, you know, an undersized back who is going to make an impact with the ball in his hands after the catch and, you know, when there are big holes in the running game.
Yeah, I think that the Eagles' defense is uniquely situated or uniquely well-designed and staffed, perhaps, the verb I was looking for, to handle this Bears offense, right? Because what's the big weakness in Philadelphia? Secondary. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows. Although, they've been better, largely because I think of, you know, Bennett and Cox and Graham and all that. But Avante Maddox has been pretty good, actually. Came out of nowhere. Great name. Incredible name.
Avante
Maddox. Like, you should be good, Avante. With a name like that, you're either going to be, like, the best cornerback or you're going to give up an incredibly humiliating play in the Super Bowl. Anyways, they've been better. But that's the weakness. You know, you'd think that any high-powered passing offense should be able to crush the Eagles' defense by just throwing on him. Well, that's not really what the Bears can do, right? So I think this could be a really low-scoring game. I wouldn't be surprised.
Here's the thing about that. If there's a 2-touchdown final score in this game, I feel really confident the Bears are going to win this game. If it's a close game, if this comes down to a field goal, for example, you would want to take the Eagles' side of that bet, given that the Bears have Cody Parkey, who looks about as shaky. He looks like an honorary Chargers kicker in a Bears uniform right now.
It is funny, right? Like, we don't think about kickers until they kill us. do they have a worse kicking situation in the playoffs?
It's weird to think the Chargers don't have the worst kicking situation in the playoffs. Badgley
from Gossip Girl
is strangely good.
Yeah.
Would it be fair to say the Seahawks maybe have
not
a
great
questionable
not great
kicking
in Seattle
situation?
Not ideal.
Not ideal. Yeah, I think it's either going to be the Bears or the Seahawks. I mean, I think everyone else is pretty much sound.
Isn't that crazy how much that can affect your game? Just thinking about the Ravens, too. Like, as we talk about them and the style of complementary football play, the significance of having a quarterback who can hit it from 55, too,
right.
That factors into all of that is tremendous.
Right. And I think if this game becomes a low-scoring game, you would figure the Eagles have better luck at maybe getting a couple of those field goals than the Bears do.
Yeah, I think you're right. I still think the Bears are going to win. But,
I do too.
But I think we figured out all the ways you can talk yourself into an Eagles upset.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think just being skeptical of Nick Foles, thinking there is maybe a 15% chance he does not make it to the end of this game, I would probably lean towards the Bears. And I think I would lean towards the Bears even covering at 6. But I do think if it's a close game, if it's a 3-point game, I would rather have the Eagles than have the Bears. Strangely.
Hmm. I don't want to bet against Nick Foles ever. Ever again. I picked against him every game last year. All the way to this, in the playoffs. All the way to the Super Bowl. So if I pick for him now, they'll probably lose. So I gotta, to support him by continuing to pick against him.
What happens, like how does the universe change if Nick Foles throws an interception to Cam O'Neill at the end of the first half of that Falcons game last year, instead of it bouncing off of his hands and into Torrey Smith's hands, and they get a field goal 2 plays later in a game that I think was decided by 3 points. Like, if the Falcons win that game, like, I don't know if Nick Foles is, he's in the league, and he's clearly, like, you know, he's the backup for the Eagles,
still,
but we feel
backup,
totally
yeah.
different about him than how we feel about him right now.
Do you think Brady would have retired if they won the Super Bowl in the sliding door scenario?
I think he's going to retire the next time they win a Super Bowl. I don't know if he would have last year, but I do think, what would have happened if the Falcons had won the Super Bowl last year?
Wow. Who would be president of the United States?
Who would be president of the United States? Sark would be a head coach somewhere. It would be a totally different universe. Daryl Bevel would be the offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons right now. It still might be.
This would be really... Really? So we'd think of the Patriots so differently if they had lost 2 Super Bowls.
It's very true. Well, they still might. They still have a shot this year. All right, Mino, let's get to the rest of the postseason in a moment. But first, let's talk about Stamps.com. And guys, I have to admit, I have a lot of family and friends who live around the country. This year, I tried to be a good person, tried to send them all gifts as much as possible, bought them little things here and there. And sure, I could have ordered something online, shipped it to them. That maybe would have been the smartest way to go about it. I'm not a smart person. I am someone, however, doesn't not want to go to the post office. I don't want to spend a lot of time leaving my apartment. It's cold in New York. I'd rather stay at home. I'd rather print out postage, rather not wait online, and I would rather send gifts to my friends and family using stamps.com. So I have a couple people I know in my family who wanted Bill Barnwell Show t-shirts. There are some. They are ultra-exclusive. I think if you went to one of our live shows, you got them. Otherwise, I have a small stash that I am not giving out unless you are related by blood to me. So unless you have a DNA test, I cannot, unfortunately, send you a Bill Barnwell Show t-shirt. But I did send a couple people in my family t-shirts, and I sent it using stamps.com because it is so easy, so reliable. I don't have to wait online. I don't have to go out into the cold. Just print out the postage on my computer, on my printer, and I'm paying the same price I would pay at the post office. I just dropped it off in the mailbox. I was good to go. Save myself time, save myself money. And if you want to start using stamps.com right now, well, I have an offer for you. Perhaps unsurprisingly, you can get a 4-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale by using my promo code, which is Barnwell, Barnwell. So if you want to do it, go to stamps.com. And before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and enter in Barnwell, Barnwell. Don't wait. Go now. That's stamps.com. Enter promo code Barnwell. Now back to the show. And a team who might give them some trouble might be the Houston Texans, who are favored to beat the Indianapolis Colts in the third matchup between these two teams in Houston on Saturday afternoon. Mina, is this the most possible ESPN wildcard matchup, Texans-Colts?
What do you mean?
Just, you know how, like, in terms of when ESPN has had a playoff game in years past, it has been, you know, like, the Texans with T.J. Yates or the Texans playing T.J. Yates. Like, it feels like it's always, like a not great team versus a team that maybe has, like, an injured quarterback or, like, maybe made it to the playoffs the week before. Like, it's the Bengals have been on ESPN a couple times. Like, it's not necessarily, like, the most exciting playoff matchup.
I think this is an exciting playoff match. I mean, the difference is that we have two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, right? In this one, I mean, two of the hottest quarterbacks, not physically, guys, certainly, but wouldn't you agree, like, Luck and Watson? This is a great game.
I was going to say two of the hottest in terms of looks.
We can agree to disagree.
We can agree to disagree is right. It could be a very exciting game. Maybe I'm being a little too harsh. I don't think these teams are great necessarily, but I think they've matched up really well over the course of the regular season. They played twice and they played to a 65-65 tie between those two games. Each split one of the games. Of course, that Colts game famously, I believe it was week 4 where Frank Reich decided to go for it on fourth and medium. In overtime, and people thought the world was going to burn down. If you are our friend Dan Orlovsky, it was the cue for the Colts to get better, and end up making the postseason. I think they are two genuinely close teams. I think the only issue for me, the only thing that worries me maybe, and I don't know why it worries me because it hasn't been an issue so far, is T.Y. Hilton is clearly not close to 100%. And yet. He's been the best receiver in football over the last 7 weeks. He's averaging 120 yards per game. He had 199 against the Texans the last time these two teams played. How is that not a bigger thing?
These are two of my favorite receivers, but both guys I've written about, both wonderful human beings, both really fun to watch. Weirdly, DeAndre Hopkins has not been good against the Colts. He was neutralized, and I know that because I wrote a story about how awesome DeAndre Hopkins is, and he rewarded me by putting up an absolute egg against the Colts. And then put up 170 yards, 2 touchdowns next week. Thanks, Yonder. It's really all about me and my traffic, guys. But they're both amazing. They're both having incredible, seasons or stretches to end the season. And they both are, I think, key to this game because the way I see it, for both teams, the formula is the same. You gotta pass. You gotta throw on both of these defenses. Both defenses, Indianapolis and Houston, significantly better at stopping the run than the pass. And in Houston, that's been exacerbated by the fact that they're trotting out, absolutely no names in the secondary right now. The Colts are just, they're still building, right? So outside, they have a lot of holes, I suppose, in past defense, but they've been a lot better at stopping the run and stopping short passes. So both sides really need to air it out, I think.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, if you told me DeAndre Hopkins has not had great games against the Colts, I would sit here and say, okay, well, yeah, I know exactly who's stopping DeAndre Hopkins from having big games. And I would think for a second and I'd be like, Pierre Desir? Like, I still think the Colts are a team that maybe, certainly more than any other playoff team, I feel like I could name the fewest players on the Colts. That's my fault, obviously, but I feel like they have a few stars playing at a high level. T.Y. Hilton's playing great. Luck's playing great. Quentin Nelson's playing incredible football. Anthony Costanzo's been very solid. Brandon Smith has been good. D'Amico Autry's been playing very well. Darius Leonard's my pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Malik Cook's playing well. But I mean, they have a lot of guys where 7 or 8 people on the roster where it's just like, oh, he is a guy. I know he exists, but I don't know that he was playing for the Colts. I don't know that he was filling a spot, let alone playing at a high level. So, I mean, you give Matt Eberflus a lot of credit for what he's done with the defense. And then, but I mean, at the same time, like, I don't know that I have a lot of faith in those guys from stopping DeAndre Hopkins from having a big game this week, even though they've succeeded in the past.
Yeah, right. I don't think it's like DeAndre Hopkins has been bad against the Colts this year. That doesn't really mean anything to me for the reason you described it. The only issue, I guess, would be that the Texans are so banged up. Not just, I mentioned the defense, but also on offense, right? I mean, do you know who's playing wide receiver opposite DeAndre Hopkins? There's a guy, Vincent Smith. He had an incredible touchdown catch. But Kiki Cutie, incredibly named. I mean, it's rough out there. I think another key for Houston, though, aside from just passing a lot and maybe not rushing Deshaun Watson on design runs 300 times a game, Bill O'Brien, would be to throw to tight ends, which is something the Colts have really, really struggled with. And the Texans have been really, really good at, but have been determined not to do much of the season for whatever reason. So I think that's another thing that they need to do. Bill O'Brien needs to let Deshaun Watson win this game with his arm.
Do you think Bill O'Brien has that in him to let him do that in a big moment?
That is my concern. I don't know what the hell he was doing in week 17. I mean, just the amount of danger he put Deshaun in, and Deshaun put himself in. So he really holds onto the ball too long. He's one taking off and running and keeping it a lot too. So it goes both ways. But there were so many design runs in that game. it was really frustrating to watch.
Of course. And I think the thing is, at the end of the day, like, part of Bill O'Brien's job is to protect Deshaun Watson from himself. And not that Deshaun Watson's not a smart player, that he doesn't make smart decisions, but just, like, the reality is, you know what Deshaun Watson's going to do. He's going to try and make plays. And, like, I think you can't – he's not going to sit there and not be a good player. He's just not going to do what he – you know, he's not going to try and do what he doesn't do well. He's going to try and succeed, and you can't fault him for that. It's your job as the coach to sort of, you know, either call more conservative plays and not have him in situations where he can – make a decision to run the football, or just keep him out of the game, which is the smart thing to do and what I think a lot of coaches would do. And I think what's interesting about the point you made when it comes to the Texans being banged up is that on the flip side of that, their four sort of homegrown stars, J.J. Watt, Hopkins, Watson, Jadeveon Clowney, those guys are all healthy. And really the health, J.J. Watt limped off in week 17, but I mean, those guys all stayed healthy throughout the year, which incredibly unlikely given the circumstances. So even though they are not 100%, even though they have holes on the offensive line, at receiver, in the secondary, I think this is the best shot they have of making a deep playoff run with this core for the next few years, because I don't know that they're going to have all four of those guys healthy for 15 or 16 games in a season ever again.
Yeah, what's the deal? I mean, Clowney, this is the last year of his contract. Do they have the space to pay him?
They are. They're going to be in better cap shape next year. They're still... they still have some dead money this year, but they still have to, I believe, sign Tyrann Mathieu as well, who's going to be a free agent after signing a one-year deal, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how the safety market shakes out right after everyone kind of took fire on the position this season. But yeah, I agree. This is the season for them. And because I don't know if that offensive line is getting fixed anytime soon either. But Watson, I think, has been... is one of the more underrated stories of the year. What he's been able to do coming off of, I mean, it's really like both of these guys are comeback player of the year. I mean, and throw Watton to the mix as well.
For sure.
In this game and should be considered as such. You know, I feel like we talk a lot about Luck and what he's done and what Reich's done, but what Watson's done has been unbelievable. I think that, so Watson, we know, it's the sacks, taking so many sacks. It's less, I'm less concerned about him turning it over as I am with Luck. I think if there's a formula for the Texans defense, it is going to be forcing Luck into, you know, making some of the sort of bad decisions we saw him make in the final game of the season.
Yeah. I mean, a pick six would be great for the Texans for sure.
And not, that's the formula, guys. Pick six.
Not
I told
out of the
you.
Question. Like, it's not crazy to imagine. Or Andrew Luck, even though he plays well, you know, he is someone who can be strip sacked on plays. He is someone who's going to, you know, make a throw into a tight window. And I think he's playing great. I think he's been phenomenal. I think Frank Reich has done an excellent job of putting him in good situations. But even in a good year, Andrew Luck threw 15 picks this season. I mean, you know, he's someone who only fumbled six times. Not as much maybe as I was reporting, but someone who in years past, Little League and fumbles in 2015 with 13, someone who you can, if you get pressure on him, you know, force him to lose the football, someone who can lose the football scrambling and, you know, running the ball when he does make those occasional scrambles forward. But, I mean, you would figure if there's going to be a pick six in this game, it is going to be coming from the Texans on Andrew Luck as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, I think you're right. Did you see, I mean, that Titans game, I was joking about this earlier, the pick six he threw where he like pumped twice, I believe, the jump pass, like, where was he? He was, like, at the 12-yard line or something. Like, he still does stuff like that. He's great, but, like, he really, really, we do use the phrase doing too much, I think, too much, but I really think that applies to Andrew Luck. So I could absolutely see a scenario in which he throws a couple of terrible interceptions early in the game. I do think that this Texan, or this, the Colts offense is built to come back from that potentially, but I think turnovers could end up being the deciding factor absolutely in this one.
I feel like we say doing it too much, but we also say stuff is too cute too much. Like any sort of play does not work that is like the slightest bit different from a typical NFL play, it's like, oh, we got too cute. Come on. Like, that's just the weirdest thing.
Every time the Saints use Taysom Hill, I say that's too cute. And I love cute things. You know I love stuffed animals. I talk about my dog constantly.
You talk to on your podcast, in fact, which we'll get to talking about in a moment here. But first, before we go any further, do you have a pick for this game?
I went with the Texans, and I'm going to stick with the Texans, just largely because of location and time and all that, I think. And the Colts playing the Sunday night game, I don't know. It feels like the cards are a little bit stacked in their favor.
It kind of felt like the Colts put everything out there for that win.
Yes.
In week 17. Like, I could see an emotional letdown that is not supported by data at all. That is just my sheer opinion. But I can do that on my show.
So you're with me.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I'll go Texans slightly in this game. I want to see Patriots-Texans. I think that's a more interesting game in the next round than Patriots. Who would be Patriots and probably Ravens or Chargers? I want to see Patriots-Ravens. I want to see Patriots-Ravens in the AFC Championship game.
Patriots-Ravens would be spicy.
It would be good. Well, Mina, speaking of spicy things, you happen to cover spicy topics on your own very podcast, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it gets really spicy on the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. There's a part in the show, the spiciest part is when Lenny asks the guest a question that's really usually quite rude. And I've been doing it in his voice. This week I pulled back and did it in my own voice, but now people are clamoring to go back to the original voice, so I might do that next week.
Are you worried that maybe you'll end up with a show that is 98% Lenny's voice and 2% your voice?
That he's slowly taken, like, you know, it started with a different name. His face wasn't in the art. He wasn't in the show at all. Like, every week he claims a little bit more space in the show.
And you have various other things going on for you as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Coming up, let's see. I think I'm going to round the horn next week, probably, yeah.
Not even sure. Just casual around the horn enthusiast, Mina Kimes. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much to Mina Kimes, our most frequent contributor here at the Bill Barnwell Show, for hopping on today. Back to a normal schedule next week. Only one show for the past couple of weeks, of course, because of the holidays, but I believe we are doing two shows next week. So recapping the wild card round, and then later in the week, we'll be previewing the divisional round of the playoffs. Thanks so much for listening. Again, happy new year, and more audio coming next week.